Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Lords Podcast with Will Rowe.
Well, welcome along to this month's Lords Podcast. Lots to discuss today, and I'm very pleased to have, for the first time on the podcast, BBC cricket commentator, cricket writer, and the captain of Middlesex Women, Izzy Westbury. Welcome, Izzy.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
Yeah, not too bad. A little bit tired.
Was that due to your win last night?
And perhaps the festivities thereafter.
Fantastic. That was leading the Middlesex women to victory over Surrey?
Yes, in the London Cup. So it's a very satisfying victory. Always good to win a derby.
Down in the Oval as well.
Yes, enemy territory.
Great stuff. And alongside Izzy, we have journalist and author Tim Wigmore. Welcome, Tim.
Hello, how's it going?
Very good, very good. Plenty to discuss today as we ask, can England become the number one test-ranked side in the world? Look at selection issues for the current series against Sri Lanka. Debate whether a franchise model is the way forward in county cricket as Brendan McCullum joins up with Middlesex for the NatWest 2020 Blast. And I put my co-host to the test with the latest Lords podcast quiz. But first, we're on the eve of the second test between England and Sri Lanka up at Durham. Jake Ball or Chris Wokes? Who's going to be selected?
Who's going to or who should be?
Let's go with who should be because I think we know who may be.
Well, I think for a like-for-like replacement of Ben Stokes, you're looking at that all-rounder role, and you're going to have to say Chris Wokes, despite
having... Yeah, he's like the anti-Ben Stokes and also the nearest to Ben Stokes. Like, he's a very, very boring, very dull Ben Stokes. Well, he's still a sort of Ben Stokes.
Ben Stokes-esque. You say he's the anti-Ben Stokes, but on his call-up to the squad, he got 9 for 36.
Then he got ducked, so...
No. It's not as crazy. He's a steady Eddie as a cricketer, whereas Stokes is up and down. You'll probably get more downs with Stokes and a lot more highs, and with Wokes you kind of know what you're getting a little bit more. Obviously he could slot in at 8. I mean, England will think that, I suppose England's batting wasn't brilliant last game, whereas the bowling was fantastic, so balance aside it makes more sense to bring in Wokes, but I suspect they'll go for
I think you're right that he's different temperament to Stokes, but in terms of skills wise he can bat.
Yeah,
he's opened the batting for Warwickshire before, etc. Well, he did actually the other day, perhaps slightly unusually. And he bowled extremely well. He got 9 for, I think, in that match.
Yeah, 9 for 36.
Whereas Jake Ball, at the end of the day, is an out-and-out bowler.
Yeah.
It depends on tactics. Why do they decide they just want to try and skittle Sri Lanka again? Or do they want to actually try and build up a decent total?
Wokes is in a funny sort of stage in his career. Cause he's been on the peripheral side for a couple of years, and you kind of think he needs a run very soon, or it's probably never going to happen for him. It's possible he would end up as sort of the rat catcher of his generation, either the best county player who didn't really make it with England, which would be great for Warwickshire, but I'm sure he'll have ambitions to do a bit more than that.
I think the thing about Wokes for me is that he doesn't excite me, and I don't think he excites many people. Whereas Ben Stokes, as you said, he's up and down.
He's got the X factor.
Absolutely, almost the Andrew Flintoff kind of mould. Whereas Wokes... Whenever he comes on, both to bowl or to bat, you're not really sure. You're thinking, he might do a little bit, chip in here or there, but he's not going to take the game away.
Yeah, he's a 30 and a 2 wickets for 60 man.
Yeah. Whereas if you look at somebody like Jake Ball, I mean, I watched his bowling spell against Yorkshire. That was that County Town match that sort of it was headlined as having huge number of England players. There was Stuart Broad was playing, etc. But actually, it was Jake Ball that stole the show. That was really exciting to watch. So if you're looking at that X factor, perhaps okay in one department, then you've got to go Jake Ball.
Yeah,
it's probably not going to happen.
But I mean, in terms of, do you see there isn't an England side with Ben Stokes and Chris Wokes in it, but there is an England side with Ben Stokes and Jake Ball in it potentially. So would you not blood Ball for this test? Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, Wokes would his aim is probably to become the third seamer, maybe when Anderson goes in a couple of years or whatever, and he played that test in South Africa in that role. So he would think he's good enough. I suspect he's not quite good enough to be in England's top three fast bowlers. So then it becomes he's kind of the nearest to a like for like. So in that sense, picking ball. I mean, to be honest, an issue we have is that playing Sri Lanka at Durham is May is so dissimilar to any other test England will play actually if Jake Ball comes in and gets 6 or 50 or whatever, does it prove that he can take wickets in India? No, it doesn't. Or even at Lords in August against Pakistan.
Well, this is it. I think even before the first test had finished at Headingley, we were saying how ridiculous the conditions were. You're playing the first two tests up north. Nothing wrong with playing them up north. It's more playing them in May up north. And when you go to India, the conditions are going to be wildly, wildly different. You're going to get a turning pitch. It's going to be horrible.
Mm.
Is a seam bowler like in a mold of work is going to survive and thrive out there?
But you could say the same about Jake Ball.
Possibly, but I think I'd back Ball more with his bowling than with Wokes.
And in the batting department, where do we feel England sit at the moment? Because there's Sam Robson at Middlesex is scoring runs for fun, and it's no secret that Nick Compton is struggling there. His county teammate.
I just think they should pick Sam Robson for the Lord's Test alone. Just draft him out.
Yeah, they used to do that with bowlers, like Headingley.
Just bring Robson in at Lords. Bat. Yeah.
Well, I mean, he got 19. He would have broken a ridiculous number of records if he got that century
that
yesterday.
Extra run,
That extra one run. He got 99. That would have been four centuries on the trot. okay, it's against county bowlers, and yes, he would probably drop four or five times. But equally, he's comfortable here. I don't think it's the most ridiculous idea.
Mark Stoneman at Durham?
Yeah, of course, you can do it. It has been done. And it is tricky, of course, as you say, because Nick Compton is also a Middlesex man. Of course, he got a duck in that one innings last week. But you know what? So did Joe Root. It happens. And you'd want to back him, at least have a go at this one and see what happens.
Yeah, I think Compton has to be given the rest of this series, really. Yeah. And then that'll be that'll be run of seven tests in his second in career, if you like, and that you can kind of make a judgment after that, as I did with Robson originally after seven. I think making judgment on fewer tests than that. The other thing about Compton actually is he's only played 14 tests. I think only three of them have been at home. So he's actually he's gone to India for four and South Africa for four. So the tests he's played have been very, very hard. And I think he would think that if he got a whole England summer, he would actually be able to get enough runs to sort of cement his place.
So he's due a run for the rest of this series. I think that's fair enough. Looking ahead to the next series and to the topic that we trailed at the top of the podcast, can England get back to number one in the world? They currently sit fourth behind Pakistan, India and Australia. Pakistan at home this summer, then they go away to India, and then in a couple of winter's times, it's the Ashes down under. Is this the makings of a great England side?
Well, I think you agree as well, Tim. The fact that India and Pakistan sit second and third in the test rankings is a bit absurd. So there's no reason why I don't think England can climb up there. I think it's more Australia is the one to beat.
Yeah, I mean, so if they can beat Sri Lanka and Pakistan this summer, as they would expect to, then they'll hold the bilateral trophies in all against all nine test opposition, which is a very, very good start. I think the real issue actually is that it's getting much harder to win at home series.
Yeah.
Easier to win at home and harder to win away. So we have a situation where actually, what does being world number one mean? That world number one can still probably go away to Australia or India and still be the underdogs. So really, we're in a situation now where there's not one fantastic test side who stands out from the rest. And England at home probably are already the best team in the world, but England away are probably a fair way off being that. I think there's being number one, actually, while it would be a great achievement, probably would mean less now than in some previous eras, just simply given the quality across the board.
Why is it harder for sides to win away when we were discussing this the other day? The facilities, the modern players, they're used to playing away. They go and play. They play all around the world. Why do teams struggle to win series away and what are not actually alien conditions anymore?
I think one of the biggest factors is the tours have got so much shorter. So Sri Lanka here had a couple of games before which were pretty half-hearted, and then they're into the test series. Often we've had teams before coming in the first series of the summer and their players have been in the IPL and have only come two or three days before playing opening tests at Lords, which is, and historically you'd have five, six, seven, eight tour matches. I think that's a huge factor. I think the sheer amount of international cricket as well is probably a factor, because they're on the road, and at the IPL as well, they're on the road so much. So actually, the value of being at home comforts, etc., actually probably becomes even more important.
I think another thing as well is that you say that all international players are playing all over the world. Well, they are, but predominantly in white ball cricket. I mean, you don't get, and apart from a lot of Australians really coming over for the county championships and South Africans perhaps, most of the international domestic stuff that they play is T20, IPL, CPL, BBL, etc. So actually the adjustment to conditions with a red ball, and for instance England swinging red ball, not many teams have that. And we saw it with Australia, I think. They didn't have much preparation, again, playing quite lowly county divisions as Sri Lanka have done here. They haven't had much experience under red ball conditions.
And I guess the other thing is that until 2000, England didn't play any tests at home in May. And obviously we've seen, we'll probably see at Durham again this week, what an advantage playing at May. In May in England is, it's like nowhere else in test cricket. And that actually obviously magnifies home advantage in a massive way. You suspect actually even if Australia came in May, England would be able to do very, very well indeed.
So it's much easier. Well, it's easier for the touring team that comes second in the summer to try and get a result.
I think so. I think the conditions are less alien, and I think
you hope in July and August there might be a little bit of sunshine around these aisles.
Might even turn a little bit.
And you were talking there about the amount of white ball cricket. Mm. It's now back here in England. The 2020 blast is up and running. It started again. Colin Graves on the on the eve of it beginning. Colin Graves basically didn't say it was very good. Said it's nowhere near the IPL and the Aussie Big Bash. What do the ECB, what do England need to do to get this tournament working? I mean, I know next year they're going to put it in a block. Is that some way to getting it there?
That's something. I mean, so the last few years, it started, the first day of last has been the day before the FA Cup final, which is just crazy for me. You shouldn't playing T20 cricket in Manning just doesn't work at all. So if you push everything back a month to, 15th
and the players
June,
don't come either.
Maybe.
You know, none of your headline acts are going to come to England that early because it clashes with the IPL.
Yeah.
And frankly, because it's so long, the season, the T20 season, they're not going to be here for the start or end matches. So absolutely.
Yeah. So you have a situation where the best players will fly in and play maybe half a dozen games of T20 for their county, and then they'll leave almost before they can actually get to the final for their team, and also probably makes it harder for fans to develop any sort of real connection, especially when you have T20 players who are kind of like, if it's T20 in England, there must be a Dan Christian playing. So I don't know who's playing for this year, but he's always popping about you. Those sorts of players, and they're just recycled between counties. I think that makes it harder for fans to feel a connection.
Yeah, so a block is definitely a step forward, I think, in my mind. It's just that the steps seem to be slower and smaller.
I think playing it in divisions would be a big step, because for the whole sort of the quality of the tournament, you want the best players to be concentrated in the first division. So you could have a first division where you say you're allowed three or four overseas players and only say two in the second. And the other thing is that sometimes on Sky they'll actually, because Sky are very wedded to the idea of showing every county a certain number of times, which is kind of a noble ideal, but I'm sure you've got lots of cricket fans who call it T20, but if they're channel flicking and it's Derbyshire v Northants, with respect, they're going to turn off straight away. And if it was Surrey v Yorkshire or something, they'd probably be more inclined to watch. So that I think it could be marketed, even for what it is, without ripping it up. I think it could be marketed a hell of a lot better. And by starting it, that would make it a huge difference. And I think there's sort of quite simple ways. It's like, if you started every tournament with a derby day or a derby weekend, so you'd know that Sky would always be showing the Roses match, whatever, Somerset Gloucestershire and Middlesex v Surrey, and you'd have all England players always be available for that block. That would probably be a time when newspapers would be forced to put county cricket on the back pages. And if you make those, what the Big Bash has done very well, they've invented traditions, and they've only been going for 5-6 years.
Yeah,
but they'll always have a Boxing Day matches or New Year's Day.
And I think another thing with the Big Bash is because they play it in quite a
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Concentrated period, and it's sort of there's the match every single night. There's only one match each night, but it means that people get home from work or whatever. Mm. They turn on the TV and they might not be wanting to watch cricket, but it's there.
Yeah.
It's on TV. And I think the thing with the NatWest T20 Blast is you don't quite know when it's going to be on.
Yeah.
You know, it's on this Thursday and Friday, but it might not be on next Thursday and Friday.
Yeah.
It's quite actually hard to follow, but with the Big Bash, you don't even have to think, and IPL as well. It's scheduled so that it's on every single night, and there's just cricket. It's there on a plate. You don't have to
think about it.
So much choice in today's sort of society that if it's just served to you instead of having to go and find it, then of course it's going to be watched more.
And the other thing is, I mean, the T20 Blast, the group stages often finish when the school holidays start, which is just absolutely crazy. Like, it's just and the whole Big Bash is based around the school holidays.
Yeah.
The thing is, the Big Bash ticket prices are a lot cheaper. I think Kenner advertising £30 for an adult, which is kind of incredible, and you can get for about the same, you can get a family ticket to go to the MCG.
If not less.
Yeah, which is for two adults and two kids. Yeah. So the ticket prices are a huge problem as well.
Well, I think the ECB is moving it in the right direction, and next year there will be that block where it's in the summer holidays. I'd like to ask, Izzy, you were in Australia this last winter, so you sort of witnessed it firsthand, working as a journalist out there and also as a cricket fan. Yeah. What was the experience like?
Well, I mean, to sit at the MCG and watch the Melbourne Derby when there are 83,000 people watching, you know, domestic cricket, that's something that I think no one has ever experienced before. It was incredible. And like I said, I think it's just become part of the culture. There's a lot of things going for the Big Bash, and that, remember, from going from the states to the franchises, there were six states, and it was very easy to make eight franchises. 95% of the population in Australia is city-based.
Yeah.
So it's a very easy model to start up. But the key for me is that it's on free-to-air TV.
Yeah.
You know, every kid can watch it, and they create their idols, and it's there. It's, again, it's just part of the culture now, and I just don't think that the population in England has that because, well, mainly because they can't access it.
And you use the F word there, franchises. Mm. Is that the way to go?
One of the important things, as Izzy alluded to, about Big Bash in Australia actually made it easier to see cricket because it created more teams. So if you're the wrong side of Melbourne from the MCG, well, suddenly you had a team on your doorstep, so it became easier. So I find it, you know, if you're on Taunton, you go every week and you're on the 7,000 set it out, you're just not going to go to Bristol.
No.
If that's the only... So I don't think... I think there's two different issues here. I think we should have divisions which concentrate the quality, and then you could have a game a day on Sky from the Premier League or whatever you want to call it, and you could have the same or even more teams and create a pyramid structure. So, you know, teams shouldn't be like, again, if you're Essex and you're selling out, well, that's a very good thing for cricket that you're selling out and it's engaging new fans and everything. So you shouldn't take that away. But there's a way to have, and we have the kind of traditional rivalries and brands which are actually very strong in England and actually the envy of domestic cricket in other countries all around the world. There's a way of tailoring that in a better way than the system at the moment, which having 18 teams basically just separated by region for quality and fan interest is not a good way of doing it. If you had a Premier League of, say, eight teams, then you could have casual cricket fans would know who they were and would know the players in those teams and their they don't have the time or inclination to learn about 18 different teams. I think that's one of the issues. If you flip on Sky and there's a random game between Leicester and Gloucester or whatever, if you're a casual cricket fan, you don't really know any of those players. Again, you're not going to really.
I think the key for me is that it needs to be concentrated into fewer teams. At the end of the day, 18 is just too many. Whether it is through franchises, zonal franchises, one idea, I don't know. I think obviously you don't agree with that, but I just think that it needs to be fewer teams so that you can relate to the players, that you can know who they are, identify with them. And you know what? Maybe that is through a first and second division structure. Maybe it's through franchises. But I think at the moment it's obviously just not working.
And bringing it back to this summer. Of course.
The Natas Bath is going to get, I think, 1 million people through the gates this year.
Yeah.
So I think, although it's certainly not working as well as it could do, it's not doing...
Yeah.
You know, if you said someone in England 15 years ago you'd have 1 million people to the domestic competition, that'd be incredible. So there is some stuff going right with it, but there's so many fundamental flaws which I think could be addressed to make it so much better.
I think as well, just for the players, I think obviously England did extremely well in the World T20, but I think for the player experience, so they want to perform in front of crowds, they want to have the kind of experience they did that there is in Australia. And almost the fact that...
But as you get that at Surrey and Middlesex...
Absolutely, but it's too few and far between,
and
almost.
You get that at Old Trafford and Headingley often. And I think if you had more England players and again, more of a sort of sense of momentum to the games, you could actually...
And I think the
because you tell Yorkshire you're not going to have a team, lots of people would be furious about
that. Of course,
that.
Absolutely. And the key for me is the fact that we've got England players in the IPL right now. Who will be playing the IPL over their home county, who they've been playing for since the age of 7. So that shows the perspective of which the T20 Blast is held compared to these foreign far-flung tournaments. Okay, money's a factor as well.
Yeah.
But equally, you want to get to the stage where Sam Billings, for example, it has the opportunity to play for Kent and the opportunity to play for, is it Delhi Daredevils, I think he's playing for, and he chooses Kent. That's what we want to get to. I think.
But it wasn't even him choosing it. It was Andrew Strauss actually said, it's better for your development, which is realistic and right from him, but it's also a damning indictment.
Absolutely.
Because actually Andrew Strauss is making that decision with England in mind, thinking about the 2019 World Cup.
For the individual, it makes sense, but for cricket, he's right to do so, but it's a kind of sobering reflection. So that's what I'm saying, is that that's almost an indicator, is that when we get to the day in which Strauss, be it whoever decides, says, actually, go play for Kent in T20 Blast, that's when you realise it's actually going on the up.
That's when the standard reaches and you've got the Big Bash, the IPL and the T20 Blast.
Well, just on standard, I don't think the Big Bash is really any better than the T20 Blast. Lots of English players do way better, like Michael Lam, Ricky Wessels do far better than the Big Bash and the T20 Blast. So the issue for me with that comparison is not of quality, it's of marketing and how you present it to fans.
So it's the IPL where the quality is, Big Bash is the marketing. So if you can marry the two together?
IPL is... possibly slightly higher quality, but actually a lot of IPL is based on amazing batsmen thrashing very mediocre bowling. And you have often, you have players whose job it is to go for 45 in their four overs.
It's the experience, it's the high pressure situations, etc. And you just can create that more at the moment within the IPL and the BBL.
It's a fascinating debate. We could go on for all morning and all afternoon. Bringing it back to this summer, Brendan McCullum will be here at Lords. Yeah. He'll be playing for Middlesex. You were mentioning a moment ago, Tim, Surrey versus Middlesex here is 28,500. It sells out. It's exciting. The players love to play in it. A couple of years ago, it went down to the final ball, which was great. I think Surrey won. Zafar Ansari scrambling through for a single. How excited are the two of you to see McCullum back at the home of cricket, the spiritual home of cricket?
I'm just hoping that it will sort of lift Middlesex's T20 woes out. Yeah. But yes, exciting, of course, because now that he's retired from international cricket, he's available for, I say the whole thing, obviously he's now in the IPL and his team got through to the final, but for a good chunk of it. And we need a headline player, Middlesex.
Yeah, it'll be fantastic. And actually, if you look around, there's some really, really outstanding overseas players around the counties this season, probably far more than people realise.
Yeah, you've got the likes of Sangakkara, Jai Warner, Chris Gayle. That's just naming sort of the batsmen. So, yeah, it's as we say, it's going in the right direction. And this summer, there will be some explosive games and should be some great games.
The thing about McCullum as well, with that experience and his mindset and his attitude, I think that not only will we have his individual contribution, but his presence and his sort of now, so we'll hopefully bring out the best of Middlesex and the others around it, because there's some really promising players for Middlesex who perhaps just haven't fulfilled that potential yet.
Yeah, an interesting county, Middlesex, in the sense that their T20 hasn't been great. We can't shy away from that. They did win it. 2008,
yeah. Long time ago.
But in recent seasons, they haven't been the strongest of counties. But onwards and upwards. To finish off, I'd like to put the two of you to the test with a quiz. Mm-hmm. So, are you ready for this? Basically, what I've got is a few historical moments from Lord's Cricket Ground. So I'm going to give you an option, one date, and then three options of what may have happened on that date.
Okay.
And you're up against each other.
So do we shout?
I'll... this is the Lord's podcast, Tim. It's much more...
the
we don't just
quiz.
Shout, yeah.
Put your hand up, Tim.
Yeah, no. You'll go in order.
Speak when spoken to.
Exactly. I'll put that in the middle just in case you want to refresh your brains. In 1906, one of these things happened. Was it A? Did Albert Trott take two hat-tricks in the same innings at Lord's, the first of two bowlers ever to achieve the feat? Was it B? England bowler S.F. Barnes took match figures of 11 for 110 against South Africa during the test match that summer? Or was it C? The press box at Lord's was built. Izzy, you can go first on that. So in 1906, which one of those three things happened?
I'm going to go A, because I'm pretty sure that this was advertised on the first day of this match. So I'm going to go for that 100-year anniversary.
I was going to say A as well. So I can't change my mind now.
So you're both going for A. Okay. The answer was C, the press box that Lords has built. The two journalists in the room get this wrong. That's pretty embarrassing.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, I threw you a curveball there. It was on that day. It was on Sunday the 22nd that Trott
just
did
the wrong
it.
Year.
It was just the wrong year. It was in 1907 that Albert Trott. So there you go.
Yeah.
The other guy that did it was an Indian bowler called Joginder Rahul. He also took two hat-tricks in an innings, and he also took a hat-trick in another match, and guess how many first-class games he played?
Three.
Yeah, I was going to say two.
He played five matches and took three hat-tricks.
It's a bad record. Why did he play five?
I don't know. He was obviously quite good. Right, so it's 0-0. Round two. Here we go. In 1992, what happened? Tim, you can go first on this one. Was it A, the launch of the Lord's Tour? Was it B, Alex Stewart scored his maiden test century here at Lord's? Or was it C, Ian Salisbury made his test debut at Lord's?
I'll go for C.
Ian Salisbury making his test debut at Lord's. Izzy, what happened in 1992?
I'm going to take a punt and go for B.
Alex Stewart scoring his maiden test century here at Lord's. Tim, you go 1-0 up.
Oh,
it was Ian Salisbury, made his test debut against Pakistan, took five wickets. England lost by two wickets in the match. There you go. Bit of trivia for you. So it's 1-0 to Tim. Sorry, I've got that the wrong way around. Izzy, to square it for an honourable draw, let's see what we've got here. In 1930, one of these three things happened.
Mm-hmm.
Was it A, legendary commentator and Australia cricketer Richie Beno was born? Was it B, Herbert Sutcliffe scored a century at Lord's in the test match against South Africa? Or was it C, the Harris Memorial Garden, more commonly known as the Harris Garden, was built behind the pavilion at Lord's? One of those things happened in 1930.
Richie Beno's a bit older than that. Let's go C.
C, the Harris Memorial Garden.
I'll go for A.
You go for Richie Beno. You have a steely determination, as if you know. It was indeed. Richie Beno was born in 1930.
Oh,
so there we go.
Hard
Tim.
Luck, is he?
I was rather expecting that.
It happens to the best of us. So yeah, Tim, you win 2-0. That was it. That was the Lord's podcast with a historical twist. Well, that's it today for the podcast. Many thanks for coming on. Izzy, what have you got coming up over the next sort of few weeks?
I've got a few matches with Middlesex with the women. We're playing against Sussex and Somerset, and then I'll be around the grounds doing a bit of commentary as well.
Looking forward to that.
Absolutely.
On the BBC airwaves, isn't it?
Yeah, so BBC Sports, tune in.
Great stuff. And Tim, yourself?
Yeah, just taking over. Just come back from Germany, actually, for a piece on Afghan refugees playing cricket there, which is sort of incredible. So I need to...
Fascinating.
Just finish typing up all those interviews.
It's not ready yet, though.
It'll be ready soon.
Where will it be? Where can people who's listening read that once it's there?
Crick Info.
Crick Info. Great stuff. We'll look out for it. Well, many thanks for tuning in. I'll be back next month with more cricketing stories from Lords. So remember to follow us on Twitter. Our handle's at Home of Cricket. Be our friend on Facebook. And for all the latest news from Lords, simply go to lords.org. See you soon.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.